came back. I was worried. It's SNESCAPADES, a chronological journey through the North American Super Nintendo library with a few pit stops along the way. We play them briefly, we judge them harshly, we rank them, and that is pretty much all you need to know. I am Chase Keys, and normally this is where Emmy-Zero would say, and I'm Emmy-Zero, but she's not here right now. She'll be joining us in just a moment, because this is actually Future Chase, just reminding you that this is actually part two of the September 1991 Playing with Power episode. If you haven't already listened to part one, you might want to go back to the previous episode and do that first. It's going to make some of this make a little bit more sense. Maybe it's not all that important. I don't know. You do what you want. Oh, and in case you were wondering from last time, I did look it up, and yes, Monty Mole did debut in Super Mario World, so I figured it out. And yeah, with all that out of the way, let's get back to the show and continue talking about Smash TV for the NES. We get Smash TV after that, and they're talking about how this works, and it sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah.
It sounds like you need two controllers to play this game properly, one player.
I mean, it does seem like you need that, because basically the Super Nintendo version of Smash TV can fake a like twin stick shooter control setup, because you have effectively like four different cardinal direction inputs for movement and direction. You've got the four face buttons and the control pad. The NES controller only has two face buttons. So they have a mode here that they mention where you can use a player one and player two controller to control a single character, effectively giving you that twin stick control.
Yeah, so you use the D-pad on one controller to move and the D-pad on the other controller to shoot. Hey, I guess like a little bit of like a proto-Switch kind of control scheme going on here, huh?
I guess so, yeah. I mean, I guess, you know what, though, to be fair, the NES did come with two controllers, so that they could assume that everybody had this as an option.
True, true.
So I guess it's a better workaround than nothing, but it is a little odd. And I don't know, I can't imagine that the NES with its like capacities for displaying sprites and stuff was super great at a game of this kind. But I also don't know, because I've never seen this version of Smash TV. Like you, I did not know this existed.
Yeah, I can't imagine how well this play. And I don't know, like, is there an alternate control scheme for one controller, or does it really require you to have two controllers?
It says you can double your excitement and fun by using two controllers. So I think this was an option. I don't think it was necessary for you to have it, to do it, to play this game. But I have to imagine the experience of it was not that fun if you didn't have two controllers to do this with.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. But then that also means that if you really want to play this properly two player, you would need like a four score or something else to, connect four controllers up at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Not great.
I kind of question the logic of putting this on the NES, especially when we're like, you know, the Super NES is here now.
I mean, you know what? I'm never going to be that mad at them putting a game out on a system that a bunch of people already own instead of a new system that they would have to buy to play it.
Yeah,
but this does seem like a very poor fit for the original NES.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know, it's an odd one. They've devoted a feature number of pages to this. This is another, like, six-page spread. And, no, sorry, it's only a four-page here. I don't know. I would be curious to know if there are people that have a lot of affection for this version of the game, because I know there are people that do like Super Nintendo Smash TV quite a bit. We were not really among those people, but there are people that like that. I don't know if anybody feels the same way about this. It seems like from the pictures they show of it here, it doesn't look very attractive, and I don't think it would play very well, just guessing, but
I don't see how it could have, but I don't know. It is what it is. Maybe someday we'll take a look at that and just out of curiosity to see how well that even works. But
it would be kind of interesting to go and play, because there's not that many games that have an NES and a Super Nintendo version. It would be kind of interesting to look at those side by side and see how they did with some of these games on the NES.
But yes, that's Smash TV. Not a ton of art with this one to speak of, really.
Not really.
Except for this
couple little cameras.
Got these great thumbs.
Yep, got these thumbs. Close-ups of thumbs using the control pad to play this game. But yeah, mostly just pictures from the game laid out in kind of a, you know, they didn't do like a full level layout breakdown for these because, you know, it's Smash TV, so it's just a bunch of boxes, basically. But I will say, for a magazine that is still trying to convince people that the NES is like rocking and rolling, even though the Super Nintendo's out, this is not a very convincing statement of that as an idea.
So we move on to classified information. This is, of course, Nintendo Power's little tips and tricks section where they just kind of give you a couple of random games, handful of random games, and some cheat codes for them that can be kind of explained in a paragraph or less. This is one of those sections that I always would like, you know, flip directly towards just to see if there was anything cool that I didn't know about, you know, a game I happen to have. But
totally, yeah.
A lot of games I'm not terribly familiar with. We got Kabuki.
Please say its full name, Kabuki Quantum Fighter.
Oh, right. Sorry. Kabuki Quantum Fighter. Yeah. Oh, this is the one with the guy who fights with his hair, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah, we got Thunderbirds, which I did not know that there was a Thunderbirds game on the NES.
Me either.
There you go. Bandit Kings of Ancient China.
It looks like it's a Koei game.
Yep. Very much looks like it's a Koei game. Oh, folks, the scan of this whole issue is pretty rough.
That title is hard to read. Can't deny.
Yeah, Jackie Chan's Action Kung Fu.
Mm-hmm.
Then on the next page, we actually have some games that I recognize. Adventures of Lolo 2, Kickle Cubicle, Castlevania 3, Dracula. Or is that Castlevania 2?
That's Castlevania 3.
No, it's Castlevania 3. Dracula's Curse, Mega Man 3, and Adventure Island. Oh, these are classic tips. I guess these are tips that they had run in previous issues that they were just like, oh, hey, by the way, in case you forgot, you can hold a button on controller 2 in Mega Man 3 and you'll jump higher.
I mean, look, these games were definitely still selling at this point. These were like hit games. So that makes sense.
Yep.
You know, and I'm sure that in a couple of years they'll be reprinting this tip for Kickle Cubicle as well. So
yes. Yeah.
You know,
timeless game, timeless. Speaking of things with a kick in the title.
Yeah.
The next game we're going to be talking about is Kickmaster.
Kickmaster, a great name for a game. I don't know about this game. I feel like I should know about this game. They've got some fun art for this one in here. But yeah, this looks like it's maybe kind of a Ninja Gaiden-ish action platformer.
Yeah, it kind of looks like, just from looking at it here, it gives me vibes of like, hey, what if Castlevania, but you had to kick Dracula to death?
I'm into that. That sounds fun. That sounds like a good time, frankly.
Here's what I do know about this game. Jeff Gerstmann, who's a professional video gamesman, he's doing something kind of similar to what we're doing, except he's going through all of the NES games right now on his YouTube channel.
Cool.
He recently looked at Kickmaster. Kickmaster has a really cool feature in which from the main screen you can do like a demo mode and it'll just like play through all of this character's special moves and kind of tells you like what the requirements are for them. And I'm like, that's an interesting way of going about that in a game where like you've got maybe complex special moves. Like Double Dragon on NES probably could have used something like this.
Yeah,
it was an inspired feature.
That's a legitimately good idea.
Yeah and something I have not seen many or any games of this particular era try to do.
No,
so
yeah.
I thought that was very neat.
I agree. Yeah. I like the idea of that a lot, honestly, because as we know from this magazine here, the road to Belzed is full of danger. And
yeah,
I would like to know how to do all this guy's moves. So yeah.
Yeah. And like the way it was presented was kind of interesting. Like, you know, it would play like this little music ditty as he's doing the move. And then, you know, the music would stop and it would say like, you know, you can do this move at level whatever. And then it would play the music again, you know? So it was kind of like this
yeah,
well-produced kind of thing. You know, it would take, you know, like about 30 seconds or so to run through it. But I was just like, that's neat. That is a neat thing. Why didn't more games do that back then?
I don't know. That's a really good question. That would be really cool to see as just like a part. You know, it's like games of this era were so allergic to putting any kind of like information about how to play them inside the game itself, because they just assumed you had the instruction manual where all that stuff was. But honestly, it would have been really good if more of them had done this. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, like, you know, I don't want to go too, I don't want to be too hard on game companies of this era, because, you know, I mean, like, these cartridges were pretty limited at the time. There's only so much stuff you could cram in there. But I think that, like, finding this interesting way of displaying some of this information in the game itself was, you know, I think that was really, really cool. It was a really good concept. And it also kind of breaks down all those same special moves here in like the second page of the of this particular article. But yeah, I just thought that was a really neat thing. And yeah, maybe this is a neat game. I can't remember where Jeff came down on it, but I don't know. It looks very much, it's got very Castlevania-y vibes, except
it does. Yeah.
Except you are not whipping creatures. You are kicking creatures.
You're kicking creatures. You're kicking like a giant sloth on as depicted in the art on one of these pages. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
I love giant sloths, but you know, if they're gonna try to fight you, you gotta kick them.
You gotta kick them.
My favorite picture though is the one of the Kickmaster just kicking a wizard full in the neck.
Yeah.
You know, at the bottom of page 46. And like, it's very funny to me because like the Kickmaster is depicted as like, you know, like this is like a fantasy world, like a fancy ass fantasy world. But he is like a guy in jeans and a tank top. And it's very funny to me. Maybe it's supposed to be like a post-apocalyptic thing, like a Fist of the North Star sort of deal. But yeah, just seeing him do like a high kick on like a thing that looks like a big orco from He-Man is really funny to me.
Yeah, yeah. It almost looks like he's like kicking a wizard robe or something.
It does look like a wizard robe. Yeah, that's true.
I don't know, yeah, like what the story is here, because you've got, you know, a kick man with, yeah, like you said, jeans and like what looks like a vest maybe. But he's going through like these worlds with like, you know, fantasy-based creatures, like a cross between fantasy and Castlevania type enemies. So I don't know if this is supposed to be like taking place in the past or what. I'd be interested to know what the story is here, but the magazine isn't really giving us any of it.
Not super forthcoming about that. No. So the basics are, you know, you will have to kick your way to the lair of the evil wizard Belzed to rescue the kidnapped princess Sylphie. And that's what we've got as far as story goes here. So I'm a little intrigued. I can't deny it.
Yep. I do like these little panels that they've drawn for this game. I'm guessing the first, mm-hmm. you know, big image is probably from cover art or something like that. Although I could be
probably
wrong.
It looks a lot more kind of finished as a piece of art than a lot of this other art does. So, you know, I bet it was some sort of official press material.
Yeah, but all this other art's got some style to it. I will give it style points. I like it. I like they don't just have like generic art, you know, around the corners, but like, hey, we're going to give you some panels of this guy kicking because he is the kick master. You need to see what he does.
He's the kick master. Yeah.
Shall we move on?
Let's move on to Worm.
Worm.
Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Yeah. I know nothing about this one. We get a cool picture of a little drilly tank thing, which I guess is for
drill tank, yeah.
Drilling to the center of the earth.
Yeah. That's what you're using. I don't know if Worm is just like the overall name for like the enemy in this game or what, but yeah, the tank is called the VZR-2, and you are actually playing as the Dauntless Pilot of the VZR-2. This like cool looking like green haired anime lady named Moby. So yeah, and you're going to the center of a planet you're exploring and fighting a bunch of monsters on the way.
So you are playing a lady who is trying to rescue a princess?
You are, yes. Which
That's
is interesting.
Pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right.
I love the sound of that. And yeah, the levels appear to be split between levels where you control the tank and ones where you're on foot doing platformy stuff.
Almost like Blaster Master, but it seems like it's more
like Blaster Master, but a little bit more like kind of I don't know, like segmented out, you know?
Yeah.
Like here's a level, here's a ship level, here's a on foot level. You know, it's not quite so much like switching back and forth that way. But yeah,
It's more like James Bond Jr., which I'm sure is a very fair comparison.
Yeah, great comparison that I'm sure would make the people who made this game really happy. So
Yeah, that one looks cool. This might be one I'd have to check out. I'm surprised that they didn't try to change the green haired lady into a guy for the American release. I'm happy to see that.
Indeed, apart from changing the name of the game itself to Worm, they seem to have changed absolutely nothing in the localization about like the context or the art of this game. So yeah, that's really cool. I always like to see that. And it's always nice to discover another game with a female protagonist on these classic systems, because they were so few and far between.
Oh yeah, there were not many. So yeah, good on them.
Yeah.
So we also have this feature as part of the poster. They do this a lot where, you know, some of the games that have longer stages, they will put the screenshots of those stages on the poster pages so that they can kind of show the entire thing in one go.
Right. And I like that because, yeah, we've got these big, long layout shots of some of the levels here.
Yeah. But then on the other side of that, we've got a poster, and that poster is kind of chopped up in a weird way in the scan, but it is an F-Zero poster.
It is. Yeah.
And we actually get like a cool look at all of the vehicles racing on a racetrack. We got a cool city skyline background for that is appropriate for the game. We also get a look at all of the drivers, which we don't get a good look at in the game itself.
No, we don't. And we get to see them actually in their vehicles, like how those vehicles actually accommodate people inside them, which is really nice.
Yeah.
And yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah, it's really cool. This is a really neat poster. I think it looks really sharp. Of course, it has the coming soon to your Super NES thing that I've talked about that before. Mm-hmm. I don't like that they do that, but I don't need to hammer that home for the umpteenth time. So I will probably stop mentioning it just to, you know, you can always assume that that's the case, because I don't think there was one where they didn't do that, but
sure,
I'll stop boring everybody by saying how much I hate it, because I've probably done that in like the last five of these that we've done at this point. So
I like the little kind of saucy look that Pico, the green alien guy, is giving the camera here.
The galaxy fueled by fans across the universe and driven by the need for speed.
Special Game Boy feature. This is a thing that they were doing in the magazine around this time, where they kind of partitioned all the Game Boy related stuff off into its own little section. So we get some breakdowns of various Game Boy games. Game Boy gets its own classified information section. I don't know if I like this. For one thing, like, they give the Game Boy section all its own look that's, you know, pretty standard across that entire part of the magazine. And it's kind of blah, you know?
You know, for example, the first of the things here is a multi-page, like, I think this is like a 10-page spread on Final Fantasy Adventure. And it's like, that could have had its own branding. That could have had its own, you know, sort of vibe going on. And it's a little odd that they didn't, that they've made this choice instead.
Yeah, we get a few little pieces of art here and there. Like, we get a not terribly detailed chocobo. We get the chain. The chain gets its own art. We've got like a Final Fantasy character in there. But yeah, for the most part, it feels very, very empty and lacking personality. And it's kind of a shame they decided to do the Game Boy games like this. It's just not very exciting, especially when, like, you know, all of the screenshots are going to be monochromatic. So, you know, it kind of makes the entire thing just feel really drab, and it's disappointing to see. It's disappointing to see the Game Boy get done dirty like that.
Yeah, I agree because they clearly thought these games were like worth enough space to give them the same kind of, you know, page count that they're giving games for the NES. They're just kind of shunting them off into this ugly little box. So I really get that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like RPGs around this time seem to be kind of hard sells for the average American gamer, and like putting one on Game Boy even more so, but you thought it was good enough for 10 pages. So, you know, like convince us.
And also I think they had a better chance with this one in particular, because this is Final Fantasy Adventure, which is the action RPG spinoff. This is the game.
Yeah.
This is the game that is technically the precursor to Secret of Mana, the game that we've already talked about for the Super Nintendo that, was kind of like a big Super Nintendo release. So they could have tried to sell this one as more of a Zelda-ish game, I think, instead of, you know, this kind of odd little half measure. It's weird, yeah.
I keep thinking back to the Final Fantasy strategy guide that Nintendo Power put out in the early days, which just had this gorgeous fantasy artwork. Like, I don't know how much you would associate that kind of art with the Final Fantasy brand these days, but back then that was a completely, you know, like obvious kind of parallel to make, you know, like a Final Fantasy fantasy themed, like D&D type
totally,
art.
Yeah.
That's what we're going
totally.
With. And the art was just really gorgeous, you know, and they could have at least like done something like that for, you know, the title image, but no, it's literally just
the box art logo. Yeah.
The logo over a green background, and that's it.
That's it. Yeah.
Even going back to like the page that kicks off the Game Boy special feature, all it is like a picture of a Game Boy, a picture of three Game Boy packs, and each of the packs has the actual Game Boy title screen superimposed over it. And that's all it is. We also move on to the Tecmo Bowl Game Boy game that came out. At least we get like a fun
sure
picture of football people. Very, very stylized, very, you know, like airbrushed in dark colors. It's kind of neat, but I don't know if I've got anything else to say about
not really Tecmo Bowl. Me either. It's Tecmo Bowl. We get pictures of a bunch of the different teams here. They all look basically interchangeable because they are tiny football men that have been rendered on a Game Boy screen. But a little two-page thing on Tecmo Bowl for the Game Boy. And then turn the page and we get a two-page spread on Marble Madness for the Game Boy.
Yeah, Marble Madness.
I gotta say, actually, the Marble Madness graphics look pretty striking when rendered monochrome like this on the Game Boy. Like they actually look pretty cool.
Yeah, and they've got like, you know, big continuous maps of these things, which they didn't even do. Again, going back to the Final Fantasy, all of the maps are like individual screenshots. And I get that like it was probably like a Zelda type thing where you move into a new screen.
Yeah,
and
where it did like a flip scrolling thing. Yeah.
It still might have been neat to see it all kind of, you know, put together as one contiguous map, but
right because we didn't mention this, but the Final Fantasy one essentially it follows the format that RPG features in this magazine tend to run, which is just describing every step of the quest that you have to go on to move through a significant portion of the game. I don't know if this is all of the game, but it's a fair bit of it here at least. And they don't really do a great job of they just kind of show all of the levels as like a bunch of different boxes that are all kind of lined up next to each other, but there's no attempt to make them look contiguous like they do with platform games or like the Marble Madness thing here. Yeah. A little bit later.
Yeah, I guess in some of them they do that a little bit more than others, but still. Yeah, the Final Fantasy one is really disappointing, even when stacked up against the rest of the features in this in this issue, which like still, you know, I don't think they did the Game Boy much favors here with the way they presented all this information. But anyway, we've got a Game Boy classified information. We've got a Game Boy now playing, telling us the games that have come out that particular month. Coming soon, we've got a preview for Metroid 2, The Return of Samus. That will be interesting when it comes out. We got a Game Boy Top 10, and that's pretty much the Game Boy section.
Yeah, they have not yet adopted the thing that they would later on of putting all of the top 10s on one page, because frankly, there's only just barely enough systems to do that with at this point.
Let's see. We've got NES Achievers, where players submit high scores or other gaming achievements. A lot of people have finished Deja Vu and Double Dragon 3 and wanted to tell Nintendo Power about it.
Yep.
Apparently, Peggy Wybush of Gray Forest, Texas, absolutely dominating in Dr. Mario, getting 2.5 million points in a game of Dr. Mario, whereas the next highest score was less than half a million. So she either cheated or she is just like the Dr. Mario prodigy.
Yeah, she's just a beast of a Dr. Mario player, apparently.
Yeah. And oh, hey, look who finished. Look who is the only person to finish Princess Tomato in the Salad Kingdom. It's our old friend Koji Fox.
It's Koji Fox. Yeah. Yep.
He's back.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm starting to be fairly convinced that the Koji Fox, who is like a longtime, Square Enix employee, is the person that this article has now meant that this magazine has now mentioned multiple times. So
I gotta look into it. But
yeah, let's move on to the next major section of the magazine.
Yeah, so now we've got the Super Nintendo portion of the magazine, because Super Nintendo has not yet sort of dominated the magazine, but it will. We're talking about Castlevania, which is, this is going to be Castlevania 4, or Super Castlevania 4, I believe is going to be the final title of this one. And kind of like with the Super Mario World thing, we get like a really quick rundown of the story up to this point with
Castlevania.
Little blurbs about Castlevania, Castlevania 2, Simon's Quest, and Castlevania 3, Dracula's Curse.
Yeah, and the magazine does not harp on it particularly, but they are not. Actually, they don't even try to explain that this is sort of a remake of Castlevania 1. But, they do mention that the guy you play as is named Simon. And yeah, we get a lot of good pictures here and a lot of good little demonstrations of what you're going to get out of this new Castlevania game on the Super Nintendo versus what the older Castlevania games had going on. There's a full page pretty much devoted to the fact that you can swing your whip in different directions in this one. And that is a very cool thing about this game for sure. And then we get little blurbs about each of the first few levels of this game. And it's enticing. It's only a couple pages long, but it's four pages rather. But it's an enticing little advertisement for this game. And, I think it would definitely have made me look forward to Castlevania 4.
Yeah, absolutely. We get like a little pretty, almost watercolor looking picture of a castle that doesn't actually look much like a castle from Castlevania, but
it doesn't look very threatening. I have to admit, it's like a nice little castle under a moon,
under a very pink sky. It's quaint. I don't know if it quite matches the vibe of Castlevania, but it is very pretty. I appreciate
that. How does
that
page look? I'm curious how that image looks in your print copy of the magazine, because I feel like it has suffered pretty mightily from the scanning, and maybe that's not true though. Maybe it just looks like that.
I'll be honest, it actually does pretty much look like that.
Oh, fair enough. Okay.
Yeah. It actually hasn't lost a whole lot in there. Like there's kind of like white streaks throughout it, which kind of like gives it that sort of painterly quality, like that hand painted kind of quality to it. That is very much like in the art.
Okay. Got it.
But I could understand somebody looking at that in this scan, given the quality of the scan, and thinking that isn't what it looks like. But no, that is pretty much it.
All right. Fair enough.
We also get SimCity.
Yes.
Game that we both quite like a lot on the Super NES. I mean, I have actually started playing SimCity on some old Mac emulators and stuff, and I am having a good time with it. I
That's great.
I really like SimCity. But yeah, we talk about some of the basics here. I don't know if this is quite enough to really get you started if you are completely new to SimCity, but...
You know, it kind of explains... It explains the basic premise. It's much more of a preview than a feature, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's trying to kind of give you the vibe of what this game is sort of like, but... And it does mention that it is kind of freeform in a way, and that you can play it in a way that isn't as direct. It doesn't have, you know, quite the same type of goals that a lot of games would have, which is true. And that's like a thing that's important to try to get across to people if they've never encountered this type of game before. So
in a way, you know, like we got a little bit of this early on with the SNES where, you know, like they were trying to put pretty different kinds of software out there. And I feel like we kind of lost that somewhere. Yeah. And in a way, it's kind of a bummer.
It is kind of a bummer. The first year or so of the Super Nintendo, as we will see as we kind of move forward with it, has a lot of ports of different genres of games from the PC that you wouldn't necessarily expect to see on a console like this. You know, a lot of, you know, we'll talk about some real PC-ass looking RPGs. We will see some various strategy games that are not like the Koei kind of strategy game, but that are kind of doing stuff that you would really have only seen on a computer at that point. And yeah, SimCity is probably like the best opening salvo of that kind of thing, because it is a very approachable one of these, and it is one that has been greatly you know, embraced by Nintendo and their attempts to like make it work on the Super Nintendo. So
yeah, I think that's a big thing with SimCity, is that like they really Nintendo-fied it in a good way. You know, because we criticize a lot of games, you know, from the perspective of like, this is fine. It's kind of neat that they tried this, but this is just so much better on PC. Why wouldn't you play this on PC? This is not the kind of game where we can really lob that criticism at it, because it's like this version of SimCity is kind of its own thing, and it is perfectly fine. It is a joy to play in this state, which isn't me saying, you know, like, oh, hey, play this instead of the PC version. But, like, you know, what you think is going to be better is going to be kind of up to personal taste. But this is a perfectly great game all on its own, this Super Nintendo version of SimCity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
A game that didn't do as well when it got ported over from its system of origin is Final Fight, which was an arcade brawler that they put out on the Super Nintendo very early on. And as a result, it is not two-player. And also, just talking about this magazine. Oh, folks, I'll have this on the cover probably somewhere, but they've done Cody and Hagar pretty dirty here in the art for them. They've massacred my boy. What have you done?
What have you done to my boy?
Oh my goodness.
I think Guy is probably pretty lucky that he didn't actually end up in this game, given that there's no horrendous art of him. These are the worst depictions of these characters you could imagine.
Yeah, a lot of times when we see, you know, like art that kind of deviates from what we think of, you know, it's like from certain games, like characters or levels or whatever, we can usually say like, oh, there's an interesting interpretation here. That isn't happening here. These are just ugly and bad and really weird.
I mean, these are very much the, I'm going to date when we recorded this so severely by what I'm about to say, but in the moments made, this is very funny. These are very, Glasgow Willy Wonka immersive experience versions of Hagar and Cody right here.
Like, you're not wrong. This is very, we have Cody and Hagar at home.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I don't like going off on people's art like that, but these kind of have it coming. They're pretty.
I can't do justice to these by describing them, but just please go look at these. Just go find the scan of this article from this magazine and just look at it, because oh my god, we were talking about the art of the two characters. It's on pages 78 and 79 here. Jiminy Christmas, y'all.
I'll probably include at least, you know, like their heads in the collage that I make as the cover for this one.
Yeah, please, please do. Please do. The people have to know.
Moving on, we've got Now Playing. And one of the games Now Playing is Eliminator Boat Duel. The scan is missing one of the pages.
I noticed that, yeah.
Yeah, we also got Bo Jackson Baseball on the other page. Mm. So, you know, that's a game. It's coming out.
Yep. Yeah, and I have nothing to say about either of those games, frankly. You know what? The Bo Jackson page is here. It's just, it's, for whatever reason, been shunted forward. So it is actually it's like three pages later in this, and I'm not really sure why.
Yeah, they've mixed that up because the American Gladiator players poll thing should be like one, you know, like on two pages together. And then, yeah, I don't know why they did that, but I guess we can move on to players poll contest, which is see the American Gladiators live. So I think at one point the American Gladiators did like this dinner show in Vegas where it was like, you'd watch, you know, like this stunt show kind of thing. And
yeah, I didn't know about that. The thing I knew about that I assumed maybe this was part of was the tour, the American Gladiators Live on Stage tour, which I know about because I saw that as a kid. And when it came to the town that I grew up in, and I actually won tickets to it from like a TV station where it was like I was part of like the special little group of like 10 kids that got to go down and like meet a couple of the gladiators, and like they had us fire like Nerf crossbows at targets for 15 minutes or whatever.
I didn't know you did all that. That's so neat.
I don't remember which gladiators it was, but there was a guy and a lady gladiator who kind of, you know, did this little thing with the kids who won this contest, and I did that, and it was very fun. It was very cool.
That is really cool. I'm insanely jealous. I didn't know you did that.
Yeah, I didn't forget about it, but it didn't really occur to me that I had done this until I saw this thing in the magazine. I was like, oh yeah, I did a thing a little bit like that. I don't know what this thing is that they have, that the players poll contest winners are going to get to be at. I bet it was the thing you're talking about, the dinner show thing.
Well, you know, it might have actually been like to an actual recording of American Gladiators. I mean, you know, it was, they filmed it in front of a live audience. It's entirely possible.
This would have been really cool though. This would have been a really cool one to do.
Yeah. That would have been really fun to see. I wish they'd bring American Gladiators back, but they tried that and it wasn't as good.
They did that and it wasn't that good. Yeah.
I think the problem, like they presented it too much like a reality show instead of like trying to make it feel like an actual sports thing, you know? Yeah,
100%.
But yeah, that would have been a cool thing to do. I probably should have signed up for the contest. Then I could have also said I got to meet an American Gladiator.
Yeah. Counselor's Corner.
So this was a thing where you could write letters to Nintendo Power saying, hey, how do I do something, if you didn't want to spend the money to call their tip line. Kind of like a sort of sister column to classified information. So
right, but instead of like here's a trick in the game, it's just here's how to get through a tough bit in this that we clearly a lot of people have had trouble with.
Yeah, I did send a letter to Counselor's Corner once and got like a nice little thing back, and they told me how to beat two levels in Spider-Man and the X-Men. So
wow, that's really cool.
But yeah, we got some stuff about Star Tropics, a game that I absolutely adore, and Legacy of the Wizard, which I don't know much about, but apparently there's father, girl, dog, mother, father, girl, dog on the side there. I don't know. I don't even know what the context is for that, but you know, I'm better off not knowing. Just mother, father, girl, dog. What does that mean? I don't know.
No, you don't either. You know, it's the new Holy Trinity. Yeah. Heard it here, folks.
The four genders.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Mother, father, girl, and dog.
Tag yourself. I'm dog. we got some stuff about Ninja Gaiden 3. We got stuff about original Final Fantasy. How do I find the war mech? I remember that. They did at least one of these in almost every of those old school, like 8 and 16 bit Final Fantasies, where there'd be like one dungeon where it was like, hey, you've got a very low chance of encountering this, but if you do, you might be screwed. So
yeah.
It was kind of like, I felt like that was always kind of like a neat thing. It's like, oh, this is tense. Like, what if I run into that thing? Oh
no, absolutely. When I played through the entirety of the Final Fantasy Pixel Remaster for Final Fantasy VI, there absolutely is. I just did that a couple months ago, and there absolutely is one of those in that game. There's like an island you can land on in the second half of the game that has a monster that, as far as I could tell, was borderline unkillable if you ran into it. So yeah,
that is Counselor's Corner. We are just about at the end here. We've got the top 30 for the NES, just the NES right now. Mm-hmm. Super Mario 3, TMNT 2, the arcade game, Mega Man 3, Crystalis, and Final Fantasy. Nothing too super exciting in there. I don't know. Anything stand out to you? Or
not really. Just the continued presence of Bart versus the Space Mutants. A game that I don't know anybody who... I know we all can agree this is kind of an interesting, weird game now. I don't know anybody who actually liked this game as a kid. I think this is a game that almost every kid that I knew had played. Anybody who I've talked to as an adult who was into video games at this age, that's around our age, played this game. I don't know anybody who, in the moment, as a child, thought this game was actually good.
I think this game, like, kept our attention long enough to not make us feel like we got ripped off from the 3-day rental from Blockbuster.
That's but fair. Yeah,
in a hurry to rent it again.
Yeah,
I
think that's accurate. I mean, look, I don't even know anybody who beat. Here's the thing: I don't know anybody who beat the first level of this game as a kid. But we all thought that level was fascinating because it had so many weird things you had to do to progress forward in it. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There were some interesting ideas that I don't think were implemented very well. And
definitely not.
The game is kind of a mess.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, we got player's picks, pros picks, dealer's picks. Again, I don't entirely know what this means. They just have like, top 30s for these different categories. I assume players means like younger kids, the primary demographic of the magazine. Pros maybe means like older teenagers or young adults, and dealers just mean like the people who are in the games industry, but maybe aren't like
retailers, super big gamers possibly. I don't know. That's interesting. I feel like, it occurs to me, I feel like this is the kind of thing a comics magazine like Wizard or something would do, where they would pull like people who owned comic shops, and be like, what are you ordering? What are you buying? And what's catching the customer's attention? So it's like, I feel like that may be a thing where they're like trying to adapt that sort of logic to games here, but it's a little confusing because it's just not really a thing we have in the same way as like the local comic shop, So.
Yeah. And I don't know where they're getting that information, because I always assumed that like most of this comes from the player's poll stuff,
right?
But I don't know for sure.
Don't know either. Yeah.
And hey, if you didn't get enough Simpsons in this issue, Celebrity Profile, they were still doing this in the magazine.
They sure were. Yeah.
The celebrity is Bart Simpson this month.
That cool kid.
Who do you think they actually talked to get this interview? Or do you think they made this up entirely?
Through most of this, I just thought they just made this up. But there's actually a couple of things in here that I think are funny enough in a Simpsons-y way that they may have actually gotten somebody from the Simpsons to give them like a thing they scratched out in like 10 minutes, what do you want to be when you grow up? And his options that he gives are, I'll either be the guy who fishes the loose change out of the moat at Sir Puttawatt's miniature golf course, or vice president of the United States. Like, that's actually a very good on brand Bart line. So, which isn't to say the people writing the magazine couldn't have come up with it. It's a thing that actually made me smile, which, is something that I was not necessarily expecting here. But yeah, most of this doesn't really feel like it's like written in like his voice or anything. And no. There is a little reference here to Bart versus the World, which is not out yet, I don't think. So yeah, I don't know. It's just an odd little thing. It's not very good, but it's weird that it's here.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they just, you know, like got permission from Fox or whatever to do like a mock interview and just wrote it themselves. That wouldn't surprise me at all here. And yeah, what does Bart want to be when he grows up? If only they knew back then that
he was going to be a Supreme Court.
Yeah. People would be talking about this in 2024 and he is still 8 years old or whatever. Is he 8 or 10?
He is 10. Lisa is 8.
Okay. Lisa's 8.
He is forever 10 years old.
Okay. Well, all right. So that brings us to Pack Watch. Cause yeah, like this is one thing we were talking about nomenclature earlier. They would just call these things game packs, like pack, P-A-K, all the time.
Yeah, that's a standard Nintendo power term that is entirely consistent. You will never find the word cartridges anywhere in these magazines.
Yeah, at least not in this era. Like, you know, we used to call them cartridges. Also, I remember a lot of people calling them Nintendo tapes, not tapes.
Okay, sure. You know what, though? That does make sense because they did design the American NES to look like a VCR on purpose. You know,
yeah, you're right.
So
you're right.
That makes total sense to me. But yeah, mostly we just called them cartridges. I never heard the term packs, so I don't think they ever really got this to stick with anybody.
So we've got a lot of licensed stuff here. We got Tailspin, Tom and Jerry, and the Addams Family. Mm-hmm. Flintstones and Terminator 2. Might and Magic. Might and Magic's there.
Yep.
And this is kind of interesting. We've got really quick blurbs about Rocky, TMNT 3, Batman Return of the Joker, and Bomberman 2. We've also got a blurb about Mr. Gimmick, which did not end up coming out in America.
No. I think because the cartridges were too expensive to produce.
Possibly, yeah. I know of Mr. Gimmick because there's a company that does hand-drawn strategy guides for old games, which is kind of a neat concept. Mm-hmm. And one of the magazines that they made was for Gimmick, which is like what the game was originally called in Japan. Yeah. I think they called it Mr. Gimmick in because I think the game did come out in PAL regions.
I think that's right. There's an interesting thing that I know about. This is the main way I know about Gimmick. The way I know about Gimmick is that there is a really good annotated playthrough of it on YouTube that was done by none other than Frank Cifaldi of the Video Game History Foundation some years ago,
neat.
Where he like puts a bunch of little like overlays on the screen to like point out different like things that are going on in the game. And it's a really fascinating little watch. It's not a long game. It's like a game that takes about like 25 minutes to play through. And that's the main way I know about it, because it's like a very like technically interesting game that I think was maybe like the hardware in the cartridge was too expensive for them to want to put it out for Nintendo of America to want to put it out.
Well, that's a shame, because there's been a lot of stuff coming out around it, that people seem to be fond of that game. It's a shame we didn't get it over here, but
yeah,
it's easy to play now, I'm sure.
Yes, I'm sure it is. I'm sure I could be playing it within like 10 minutes. If you want to look the thing up that I'm talking about, it is called Mr. Gimmick Annotated NES Long Play. And it is on YouTube on Frank's channel. So, check that out. It's a neat little thing.
So we get Development Dispatch. We're getting some previews of Super Nintendo games. They're talking about Darius Twin. We got Super Rumors. These are games that various states of being ready to come out. I don't think Super Adventure Island will happen for a little while, but Ultraman's only a few months away. So, probably the same thing with Home Alone. I think that first Home Alone came out.
I think it came out very fast. Yeah. Did Wanderers from East come out that quickly, or did that take a while too?
Oh, that might have been the following year, but I can't remember off the top of my head. Actually, it looks like that was 92 games. So.
Okay, so that one took a little while to get over here, but do appreciate that they give you they give you a pronunciation for Ys, a thing that no one knew how to pronounce. in America for years and years, as far as I could tell from the fact that it came up every time there was an East game talked about in a magazine, like, oh, you're supposed to pronounce this. But yeah, here they lay it out. It's supposed to be pronounced like ease. So, yeah.
Wanderers from Wise.
Wanderers from Wise. Yeah.
Yeah, we got something called Ultrabots. Have we talked about Ultrabots yet? Or
I don't think we have talked about Ultrabots. Ultrabots Sanction Earth is the name of this thing. So, I mean, if you search for Ultrabot Sanction Earth, you don't actually get any results. So, yeah, I don't know. It looks like this was like a PC game. This was a first-person shooter for the PC that came out in 93. Maybe it's not the same thing. I don't know.
Hmm. Okay. Well, if I feel like it later, I'll have Future Chase tell you what it is. Again, if I feel like it. Well, what do you know? Looks like I felt like it. So, yes, the game that Emmy was talking about, which was a first-person shooter for the PC, it was released as a DOS game called Ultrabots. It was published by Electronic Arts, developed by Novalogic in 93, and it actually is the same game that was talked about in this issue of Nintendo Power. The Super Nintendo version just never came out. Maybe it was a little bit too ambitious for the SNES at the time. That's pretty much it.
That's the magazine right here. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's going to do it for us for today. Sorry, folks, that was a long one, but hope you all found it interesting nonetheless.
Yeah. And we realized after listening back to the previous episode that we probably are doing you all a disservice by not being a little bit more descriptive of the magazine as a whole. You know, it's like kind of just assuming everyone's on the same page as us, but Why would you be? You're listening to us talk about it. You don't actually have the thing in front of you for the most part. So, we're trying to do a little better with that. Let us know if you like this or if it's too much, I guess, but for the most part, I think that we're trying to give you a better sense of what this thing actually was like as a physical object too. Yeah, which of course was helped this time by the fact that Chase has the magazine with him.
Like I said, I'll try and remember to post pictures on various social media things, give you all an idea of like what some of this stuff looked like. And I don't know, we've been recording for like 2 hours at this point, so maybe I'll break this one up into two episodes. Who knows?
Maybe, yeah. the saga of September 91 Nintendo Power.
It would be a great way to stretch all this out if we can break these playing with powers up into two episodes, but we'll see how it all works out.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this, and next time we'll talk about some games from September 1991. What are we going to be talking about next time?
Yeah, next time we are going to be talking about UN Squadron Dracon is from Power Rangers, those comics, and Super R-Type.
All right. Well, please join us next time for that. We hope you enjoyed this. Until then, I'm Emmy Zero.
I'm Chase Keys.
Play it loud.
For show notes, game rankings, links to social media, research references, and more, check out our website, snescapades.show. Our intro-outro song is How Now Brown Cow by TechnoAxe, who very generously offers a ton of great music for free at technoaxe.com, TEKNOAXE.com. Thanks for listening.